You might like to turn in your Bible, if you would please, to Jeremiah chapter 5. Jeremiah chapter 5. In our study of Jeremiah, and Nebuchadnezzar is the coming to Jerusalem to make war. Jerusalem and Judah are unconcerned. They're indifferent about the whole thing and in the wrong kind of way. And so God has warned them by way of Jeremiah, and their lifestyle is not the best. So God is going to bring forth the charges of why they're guilty and why it's going to happen. The wilderness, Judah, will become a wilderness. Jerusalem, desolate. People dispersed, the cities destroyed, the temple down. But they don't believe that. They don't think that's going to happen. God said it is. Now, in order to get that, in the light of the chapter 5, we shared together that verse 1 and 2, that Jeremiah was to make sure that you went up and down the streets of Jerusalem, every nook and cranny, every place you go, and see if you can find a righteous man. Find a man, chapter 5, verse 1, find somebody that executeth truth, judgment, and seeketh the truth. Find somebody that does that. Just find one. And we've shared the last two or three times, so you know, the great principle that if God could have found a righteous man, probably in Sodom and Gomorrah, he would have spared it. Now, Sodom and Gomorrah was as guilty as could be, but he would have spared them a little longer. In these days, God has spared them a long time, and that's going to be the issue. God's going to make his case very clearly. So now seek for a man, one man, and I'll delay. Remember the Jonah? Jonah went reluctantly to Nineveh. And Jonah went, and the people of Nineveh, contrary to his expectation, repented. They didn't get saved. They just realized the way they were going and what they were doing was going to cause great trouble for them with God. And God said he was going to judge them. And so they repented. And you know, God waited, another 150 years, whatever, before he did anything. He gave them space. Space isn't solving. The thing's the same. God's holy and righteous and just, and the world's doing what it's doing. But God gives long before being angry. Patience. He waits. And he waits. And he waits. Nothing happens. And, you know, like in Ecclesiastes when we did it, and something should happen. God doesn't do anything, and therefore we're able to be free and footloose and fancy free and do anything we wish. And of course that is erroneous. Just because God didn't do something this year, or next year, or 10 years from now, doesn't mean God isn't going to do anything. God waits. Now, so God, Jeremiah, go look for a man. You can't find a man. He can't find a man. And, verse 2, as you know, though they say, the Lord liveth, surely they swear falsely. And if you're going to have truth, you can't have truth without God. And they were swearing, taking the name of God in vain. They were claiming all kinds of desires and wishes and prayers, and then tacking on God like a little something to make it work, to make it look good. And that's false. They were false. They weren't true. They had no truth. They swore falsely. And so, now, having said that, you're ready for verse 3, as we did. O Lord, are not thine eyes upon the truth? God, are you not looking at the truth? And God is certainly looking at the truth. His eyes are looking for truth. He said, I'm looking for truth. I'm looking for reality. I'm looking for rightness. O Lord, are not thine eyes upon the truth? Yes, they are. Hast thou stricken them? Hast thou stricken them? You struck them down. You disciplined them over and over and over and over. Time and again, they had all kinds of occasion to pay attention, to get their act right, but they didn't do it. Verse 3, thou hast struck them down. That's correct. Over if you would. But you struck them. How many times you did? Chasing them. Did anyone pay attention that something's wrong, we should fix it? No, they didn't do that. But they have not grieved. Verse 3. Thou hast consumed them and eaten them up, as it were. And the word to consume, to be hot against, hot wrath, to have wrath against somebody, to pour it out. To make one's case for destruction, consume them, to pour out, to destroy, to make them disappear. God, you hath consumed them. But, verse 3, they have refused to receive correction. They have refused. The verb refused is intensive. That means they just didn't say no thank you. They rolled up their sleeves and said, you don't even want to offer this to us. Don't you dare offer this. Don't you dare talk to us like this about you do what you do, God, and we're going to do what we're going to do. The intensive, and thus the verb. Not to like something, to dislike something very greatly with disgust. And it's intensive, unwilling to refuse, unwilling to fix, to feel with disgust, to fix anything, to refuse to fix it. And thus, they have refused to receive correction, and the correction is the rod of chastisement, instruction, correction. They have refused to be corrected. They have not been corrected. And just to pick up that word a little bit, over in chapter 2 of Jeremiah in chapter 2, and you'll note, please, in verse 30, where we found it, verse 30, 2 and 30, in vain have I struck your children. They received no correction. Their own sword hath devoured them. Your prophets like a destroying lion. And all the way you've been paying awfully high prices, but you don't seem to fix anything. Chapter 7. And picking up in verse 28, 7 and 28, you'll see the word again, correction. God wanted to correct them, to discipline, give them instruction, but they wouldn't take it. Jeremiah 7 and 28, thou shalt say unto them, this is a nation that obeyeth not the voice of the Lord their God, nor receiveth correction, there's your word, truth is perished, can't be found, and is cut off from their mouth. They were speaking, swearing falsely, and there's no truth in all that they said. Now, so in the light of that, over to chapter 5, and in verse 3, and remember you have, well, let me do it a little, one other place. Hold your finger here if you like. Over to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 1, so you can see it on the positive side. And Proverbs chapter 1, picking up in verse 2. To receive instruction, there's your word correction, of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity. Verse 3. And in verse 2, you have the word instruction also. I'll read it. Verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction, to receive, perceive the words of understanding, to receive, verse 3, the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. And so you have the word instruction twice. Down to verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. They don't want to know. They don't want to know. Chapter 3, they don't want to know. Chapter 3, and in verse 11. My son, despise not the chastening, there's your word instruction. It's chastening, I should say. Despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. You want to look to God in the light of his chastening, in the light of his correcting. You're looking to God, and you don't want to back down. That's why someone says, don't do that, fix that. And they're trying to help us. They're trying to help us, the parents or something. They're trying to help us so that we learn in school or whatever, hopefully. Now, having said that, back over, if you would, to chapter 5, and in verse 3. Now remember, God struck them, but they were not grieved. God has consumed them and been hot against them in wrath, and thou hast consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They didn't want to get it straight. They have made their faces hotter. They have brought their faces, made them intensive. It's something what they're doing. Everything they're doing is strong. So each verb you're looking at, what they're doing is they aren't just talking. They're very strong in what they're saying and what they're doing. So here's God, and here they are going against him. Verse 3, they have made their faces hotter than a rock, hotter, to fasten, to make hard, to make powerful, to make very hard, like a rock, like a stone, to bring everything together and make it very hard. They have made their faces hotter than a rock. They have refused to return or repent. They just won't do it. They will not fix anything. Will not do it. Now, Jeremiah, you're looking. There's not a righteous man up and down the street. You can't find anybody to fill the bill. That doesn't mean Jeremiah isn't right. And there are Daniel's right, and his three friends are right. Ezekiel's right. They're all right that way, but they've been rejected by the nations, so the nations left. You kick all the good guys out, then all you got left are bad guys. All you got left of them. So God said, find me somebody among the bad guys that are left, and there isn't anybody. So Jeremiah, what was the next move to make? Since you couldn't find anybody, then reasoning, verse 4. Therefore I said, surely these are poor. Therefore I have said, surely these are poor. I'm looking at the people, their poverty, their common people. I mean, what would they know? They just try to live their life and get by, go to work, go to bed, and eat something and go do the work again, and you keep doing it. Now, what do they know? They're just ordinary people. And they're looking for righteousness among ordinary people who just are trying to survive. They don't have time. So let's try to say, well, maybe we're looking at the wrong place. Because you're up and down the street, and there are the people that are going to the store and all the different things, going to work and all of that. So let's go, let's give them, well, maybe it's not them. Verse 4. Therefore I said, surely these are poor. They are foolish, that means they have no sense, and their ignorance and folly. They have no sense, for they know not the way of the Lord, nor the judgment, the justice, the decision, the requirements, legal, right, judgment, the law of their God. They don't understand the Bible, seeing it. They don't know about law. They don't even know anything. Probably can't even read. They're going up and down, doing what they do. Well, maybe we could excuse them. I mean, what do they know? But they aren't excused. But you're looking for a righteous man. And so we'll bypass them. We aren't going to find one among them. So therefore, verse 5, I will get me unto the great men. I'm going to go now and execute a search, and I'm going to go and search and get me to the great men, the chief men, leaders. I'm going to go to the leaders. If anyone should know, the leaders should know. Maybe we've been going up and down, looking up and down the street, and we haven't been going into the right buildings. We didn't go to the Capitol building, etc. And in verse 5, I will get me unto the great men, and will speak unto them. I'm going to go and talk to them. I'm going to ask them about this business of justice and truth and righteousness, etc. Verse 5, I will get me unto the great men, and there speak unto them. And the reason, why am I going to do that? Well, remember in verse 5, the middle of the verse, for they knew not the way of the Lord. Well, in verse 5, you'll see it again, the same construction. For they have known experience the way of the Lord. These leaders must know the truth. They must know this stuff. They must know. So chapter 5, verse 5. They have not known the way of the Lord. And the judgment, you see the word judgment in verse 5, the judgment of their God. Back up in verse 4, you have the same expression, the judgment of their God. So each time, what happens? Well, the ordinary person didn't know. So these leaders, these people that are in the in crowd, they ought to know what the laws are. They ought to know God. They ought to know the way of God. They ought to know the Mosaic law. They ought to know the judgment of God. They ought to know this. So I'm going to go to them. That makes sense. Verse 5. I will get me unto the great men, and I will speak unto them, for they have known, with a great word know, to experience, understand, perceive. They have known the way of the Lord and the judgment of their God. But, going to them, these have all together, all of them in one accord, all of them like-minded, have broken the yoke and burst the bonds. They have broken the yoke and burst the bonds. And so here we are looking, and they have left God, over to chapter 8, verse 7. And you'll see chapter 8, verse 7. Yea, the stalk in the heaven knoweth her appointed times, and the turtle and the crane and the swallow observe the time of their coming. But my people know not the judgment of the Lord. They just don't know. Back over to chapter 5. And in verse 5, the end. They have broken the yoke. And the word break to one accord, they have broken it. Broken off, broken away from it. Broken off. Think of the yoke, ox yoke as such. And the yoke goes around the animal's neck. And the animal is thus guided, tamed, to serve the master. And the end, they have broken the yoke. Not only have they broken the yoke, like an ox, got rid of the yoke, and to boot, and burst, have torn apart the chains, the cords, the reins. His is the oxen and the cart, and his the yoke. They break the yoke, and the chains that go all the way back to the driver, they tore them apart. So the ox is free to run, to move, free out of anywhere it wants to go. It doesn't need to be tamed, controlled to serve the master. It doesn't have to do that. They have done that. The leaders have broken, burst asunder, torn asunder their relationship to God. They are not obligated to God. They can do anything they want with God. Now, God, in the light of that illustration, God says in verse 6, "Wherefore a lion out of the forest shall slay them, and a wolf at the evenings shall spoil them, and a leopard shall watch over their cities." Now, so we have a lion, the strength of a lion in the forest. The lion is going to get the ox. The wolf in the desert is going to get the ox. The leopard, prowling all over, looking all over in the night, looking for its food. The leopard's going to get the ox. The ox wanted to be free, but the ox is going to get clipped. And you know, then the ox is going to be used in Haggai, etc. Haggai, I think, or whatever. And in the process, Israel is what? Israel is faced with Babylon. Babylon is a lion and a wolf coming after you. "You wanted to be free," said God. "I'm going to send you like an animal into the wolves, to the wolves, to the lion, to the leopards. You aren't free at all. You're going to be sorry. Off you go." Now, having said that, and therefore, verse 6, "Everyone that goeth out of thence shall be torn in pieces, because," why is that? "Because their transgressions are many." The word transgression, rebellion, they rebel over and over and over and over again. "Their transgressions are many, and their backslidings are increased." They are many, 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 backsliding. And the word backsliding is the word apostasy. Apostasy, turning away, turning aside, turning back from God. Instead of staying with him, going a different direction, like the ox set free to do what it wants to do. So now, having said that, so you've got it, Israel is not in good shape. Israel is going to be judged. And now God raises the question, two of them, first one, raises the question now to the people by way of Jeremiah, and he asks the people, the remnant that are there, Jeremiah's day and otherwise, chapter 7, verse 1. "How shall I pardon thee for this? How shall I forgive you? Tell me. How shall I forgive you?" That's his question. "In the light of all that you do, why should I forgive you? Why should I do that? Why should I wait anymore?" Now, hang on to that. Why should I wait? Now, how shall I pardon, forgive thee for this? Thy children have forsaken me and sworn by them," that is the idols, like over in chapter 5, verse 2, etc., "have sworn by them," they're idols, they're trusting everyone but God. There are no gods sworn by them. There are no gods. They're idols. They're idols' idolatry, which I had when I had fed thee to the full. I gave you all kinds of material benefits. And what happened? You just took the material and did what you want. Now, it's like the old illustration, you know, in India years ago, Mahatma Gandhi came from this country to bring to India that which would help the country. And he had in his thing, he said, I brought the Bible. The one thing America had that made a difference was the Bible. And so I brought them to India the truth of the Bible. The trouble is, I didn't have the God of the Bible. So the truth of the Bible never went anywhere. Never went anywhere. And communism was very smart back then. And they gave wonderful, wonderful literature. We were giving money, 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 money. And communism was feeding literature. Beautiful, wonderful books and literature. Communism moved, it moved in the direction of communism, not in the direction of America. Wow. Now, so here we are looking. They have sworn by their gods, which when I had fed them to the full, they then committed adultery and assembled themselves by troops in the harlots' houses. Now, you remember the temples were, in most of the time for them, they were sexually houses of prostitution. That's what they said. The god of fertility. The god of fertility. And the god of fertility is worshipped, etc. So you have all that. Now, what does it say? Well, they had their hearts, had bodies full of food. They were happy and content as they were going along. And they assembled themselves by troops. That means they brought themselves together in a crowd. They crowded, literally. They crowded into houses of prostitution. Openly and publicly, with no shame, they did it. And you know from our studies in the past, idolatry guarantees immorality. Fix idolatry, you'll fix immorality. Get rid of God, and you got a moral problem. You got a moral problem. Have God in the right place, you don't have it. Keep the first four commandments, and you'll easily fulfill the six that are left. If you try to fulfill the six without the first four, it'll never work. Love your neighbor as thyself without loving God, you couldn't do it. It won't work. And so now, so here's idolatry and immorality coming together, understandably, always did, always has, that way. The fall of most all nations, Rome and all of them, is immorality. Our own country, immorality. Immorality. So now, here in verse 7. When I had fed them, verse 8, and they were as fed horses in the morning. They were as stallions. They were given, I pardoned them, I sought to pardon them, and set them free. Now, but, verse 8, they were as fed horses in the morning. So to say it, they're well fed, and they're lusty stallions, to say it. They're well-fed, lusty stallions, is the Hebrew. They're well-fed, lusty stallions. That's in the morning. And what are they going to do? Well, they're going to whinny. They're going to whinny in verse 8. Everyone nine after his neighbor's wife. Now, what were they doing? They were into sexual prostitution, adultery. They prostituted their humanity, and what they did, they got the whole thing going. It's real big time. Wow. Now, in the process, chapter 5, and in verse 9, and before I go that, let me do one other thing that may be helpful. Go over with me to Ezekiel, so you see and are reminded. How far can it go? And you would recall this very sobering section. Ezekiel is given insight about what was happening, Jerusalem and otherwise. Chapter 8, picking up, please. Verse 5. Then said he unto me, Son of man, lift up thine eyes now and the way toward the north. So I lifted up mine eyes the way toward the north, and behold, northward at the gate of the altar, this image of jealousy in the entranceway. He said furthermore unto me, Son of man, see the idol, and see what they're doing. Even the great abominations, verse 6, that the house of Israel committeth there, in that house, in that temple, that I should go far off from my sanctuary. But turn thee again, and thou shalt see greater abominations. You want to know why I'm going to do what I'm going to do to Jerusalem? Going to go burn it down. And the temple's going. Well, no, why? Well, because I want you to know. Will you give me a reason that I should pardon and forgive them? How long do you want me to wait? How long? There's a limit. So now, if I can, in verse 7, greater abominations, verse 6, verse 7. And he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, behold, the hole in the wall. Then he said unto me, Son of man, to Ezekiel, dig now in the wall. And when I had digged in the wall, behold, the door. And he said unto me, Go in and behold the wicked abominations that they do there. What were they doing inside the temple? What were they doing? So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things, abominable beast, and all the idols of the house of Israel, portrayed upon the wall round about. And as you look around the wall, here's all the stuff, idolatry and all its forms, all over, written all over everywhere. You'll see buildings like that. Everything is written all over the wall. Wow. Verse 11, and there stood before them 70 men. Well, here's the leadership. Shouldn't I find among the leaders someone that knows the way, someone that understands? Isn't there a righteous man among the leaders? No, there isn't. Why not? Verse 11. There stood before them 70 men of the ancients, older, of the house of Israel. And in the midst of them stood Jaazaniah, the son of Shaphan, which with every man his censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up, and they're worshiping all the stuff on the wall. And then, verse 12, then said he unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of the leadership of the house of Israel do in the dark? Men love darkness rather than light. Every man in the chambers of his imaginary. For they say, the Lord seeth us not. The Lord hath forsaken the earth. God, you don't do anything, so why shouldn't we do what we want to do as long as we want to do it, God? Why shouldn't we want to do it? And so it goes on and on and on and on. Thus, over to chapter 5, Jeremiah. Jeremiah and chapter 5. What were they doing? They were doing what? Everyone did, more or less. Who cares? The ox is unhooked. Israel's going to do what it wants to do. And when you want to do what you want to do, do you care where the country's going? Well, no. No, you don't. No. Because we're doing what we want to do. And we don't want to, you don't interfere with what I want to do, and I won't interfere with what you want to do. And we'll all do what we want to do. Is that what we want? That's what we want. That's what they got. And so here's Israel. Now God, first question was in verse 7, how shall I pardon, forgive thee for this? Now the second question comes in verse 9. Shall I not visit for these things? Shall I not visit or punish for these things? Verse 9, saith the Lord. And shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this? Should not I avenge? Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, and I will execute it. That's why we don't have to be vengeance, because God's going to ultimately do it. And you say, he wouldn't do it. Oh, yes, he will. Yes, he will. Yes, he will. He wouldn't. Yes, he is. So now, in verse 9, shall I go? The question, shall I punish? Shall I avenge my soul? Shall I avenge my soul? My name is at stake. And if I don't do anything, the world says, well, then God never does anything. Man, they bring God down to our level, and we don't do anything, and therefore God doesn't do anything. And God is going to do something. And so the world needs to pay attention, and Israel needed to pay attention. God is going to avenge, and it's a reflexive. He's going to avenge himself. He's going to do so. And now, in the process of all of that, God, you're going to do that. I am. I want you to know, though, I asked you, tell me a reason I should not do it. Should I not take vengeance on those who vehemently oppose me? Ultimately, with no hope of ever making reconciliation. Wow. Habakkuk chapter 3. Habakkuk chapter 3. And in Habakkuk chapter 3, you would remember, picking up, if I may, directly in verse 2, a lovely statement. And remember now, just to keep it so you fresh in your mind, we're right now in the presence of God. Know it, like it, don't, we sure are. You can never be in more presence than he is. Wow. So as I'm reading all this, and as we're looking at it, God, you're going to do all this, and Israel didn't pay attention, and the temple in Jerusalem was leveled. Uh-huh, burned. Wow. God, well, here we are, and we're looking at that. Because we think sometime, God, you should do something about something. But God, you don't seem to do. It would help if you just did something. Send lightning bolts upon the right places. Get the world to wake up. But you don't do anything. So God, Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 2. O Lord, I have heard thy speech, and I was afraid and was afraid. O Lord, revive thy work, revive intensively, revive thy work in the midst of the years, in the midst of the years, make known. By the way, you're going to help us now, and all of this is worked out, in wrath, God, make sure you remember mercy. Your wrath has to be, but remember mercy in your wrath. God, wrath should be, but remember mercy. And you're looking for that. Now, in order to capitalize, we're going to go about 136 years into the future from this point. Into the future. Now remember now, Manasseh was 55 years king He did evil terribly. All the stuff we just read about in Ezekiel and Jeremiah 5. The stuff got so bad for 55 years, it got rotten. And the roots of it were very deep. And then Amon came along for 2 years. And then Josiah came along for 31 years. Josiah couldn't fix it. It was so deep rooted, the problems. So when you come to Jeremiah, he's just going to bring out that, listen, the problems never went away. You never fixed them. Now, over if you went to Ezra, 136 years from now, and remember, things didn't go so well. They went all right for a few people, went back, and they rebuilt the temple of some size and rehad some kind of the thing, for a little bit anyway. Ezra chapter 9, but get the mood. So if you lived and remembered way back yesterday, did we have a great yesterday to work from? No, we didn't. We had a lousy yesterday. So God, here we are living in the result of that which wasn't fixed, that which didn't change. Ezra chapter 9, picking up, please, in verse 7. Since the days of our fathers have we been in a great trespass unto this day. For our iniquities have we, our kings and our priests, have been delivered into the hand of the kings of the lands, to the sword, to captivity, to a spoil, and to confusion of face, as it is this day. And now, God, here we are. For a little space, grace hath been showed from the Lord our God, to leave us a remnant, to escape, to give us a nail in this holy place, that our God might lighten our eyes and give us a little reviving in our bondage. A little space, God. We know it's coming. And we just want a little space, a little bit of encouragement in the process of it. Verse 9. For we were bondmen yet, For we were bondmen yet, our God hath not forsaken us in our bondage, but hath extended mercy toward us, unto us, in the light of the kings of Persia, to give us a reviving, to set up the house of our God, to repair the desolations thereof, and to give us a wall in Judah and in Jerusalem. So here we are, Ezra, Nehemiah, we're going to be able to restore some stuff, and to give us a little space. It ain't going to be for long, but a little space. Skipping over directly, if I can, to verse 13. After all that has come upon us for our evil deeds, for our great trespass, seeing that thou, our God, hath punished us, less than our iniquities deserve, and hath given us such deliverance as this. We deserved a lot more, but we have been merciful. God has. Verse 14, should we again break thy commandments and join in affinity with the people of these abominations? Wouldst not that thou be angry with us till thou hast consumed us, so that there should be no remnant nor escaping? Verse 15, O Lord God of Israel, thou art righteous, for we remain yet escaped, as it is this day. Behold, we are before thee in our trespasses, but we cannot stand before thee because of this. God, you're going to have to help us. And he did. And if you go over to Nehemiah, you know, just quickly, Nehemiah chapter 8, or chapter 9, both are 9, Nehemiah chapter 9, and in chapter 9, and verse 30, rehearsing the history of Israel, right up to where we are. Yet many years, verse 30, didst thou forbear them, he did, testifieth against them by thy spirit and thy prophets, yet would they not give ear? No. Therefore gavest thou them into the hand of the people of the land. Nevertheless, for thy great mercy sake, God in wrath, remember mercy, thou didst not utterly consume them, nor forsake them, for thou art a gracious and merciful God. Now therefore, our God, since you have been merciful to us, God, great and mighty, and you are great, the mighty, and the terrible God, who keepeth covenant and mercy, let not all the troubles seem little before thee. In other words, don't think it's too small not to bother with. And then you have to go back to our thinking and our exercise when we've done the studies. What is too trivial for God? Remember we did a study? What is too trivial for God? Too small. Is your toothache? You have a dentist, but is that trivial to you? A toothache. And it isn't trivial to God. Not at all. God's loving, tender care, which it's very hard for us to get a hold of. Wow. Now, so, in Nehemiah chapter 9, may I pick it up, please? I'll have to read the verse 32 very quickly. Now, therefore, our God, great and the mighty and the terrible God, who keepeth covenant and mercy, let not all the trouble seem little before thee, thou that hast come upon us, on our kings, on our princes, on our priests, on our prophets, on our fathers, and on all the people since the time of the kings of Assyria unto this day. Howbeit, thou art just in all that is brought upon us, for thou hast done right, but we have done wickedly. So you always give God credit that he's been merciful. How many times have we done? You always thank God he's merciful, no matter what. No matter what's going on. No matter how anything, you thank God he's, you thank, T-H-A-N-K, thank God he's merciful. That's where you start. God, thank you. Now, things are going to be terrible and going to get terrible, but God, thank you for being merciful. Even though we don't deserve mercy. Even though we don't deserve it. Now, over if you would please. To 1 Thessalonians. Here we are, God in your presence. And we just read a very, if we wanted to understand it, that why you, is God absolutely right in doing such terrible things to Israel? Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, it could be more terrible. But God is always going to have a remnant, and God's always going to have Israel. So no matter how bad, there'll always be God's mercy and a remnant, because God's going to keep Israel. So now, God, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and you are mindful of the fact that we're looking at, what are we waiting for? Waiting for the return of the Lord, picking up in verse 17, then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. So we're looking. What are we looking for? We're sitting here. And we're in a world that's going what? It's going, it is apostate. And it's going more and more and more and more. Wow. God, be merciful to us. We're part of it. We're part of it. Wherefore, verse 18, comfort one another with these words. So we're comforting ourselves, looking to God, and we aren't trying to say, well, everything should come out better. No, it's going to be a great tribulation. It has to be. And remember, we did it on Sunday, but the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. And you already know the times and the seasons. It's going to come as a thief in the night, what happens. So here we are, God, looking to you. And by the way, as we keep reading, we're children of the light. We ought to walk as children of the light. And verse 9, and we are living right now. And God, we aren't trying to excuse. It's going to get where it is. And God, be merciful. Verse 9, for God hath not appointed us to what? Wrath. In wrath, remember mercy. But God, you aren't going to get rid of wrath. No, because the next event is wrath. Grace now, wrath tomorrow. That's it. Wow. So now, be merciful in God. Thank you have not appointed us into wrath, but obtained salvation by our Lord Jesus Christ. And thus, 1 Thessalonians, as you know, chapter 1 and verse 10. 1 Thessalonians 1 and 10, God. And to wait, what are we doing? Well, we turn to God from idols to serve the living and true God. The end of verse 9. Verse 10. And what are we doing? We're waiting for a son from heaven, out from the heavens. We're waiting for a son, looking for a son, whom he raised from the dead, even Jesus. And we're looking for him. And by the way, he delivered us from the wrath to come. So God, the world is going to get it, and I can't excuse the world. I can't say, God, you shouldn't do it. No, God, you have to do it. It's amazing you've waited this long. It's amazing you've waited so long. Why didn't you do something? Because God said, I wait. But when I wait no more, you will know it, and I'm not going to wait anymore. So God, here we are, and we're looking to you. And God, thank you that we have a great hope, a great encouragement to go forward. And things aren't going to be so easy. They're going to get harder in all kinds of ways. You're already starting to see them, and they're going to get there. And it's going to be a different. So God, we're going to have some help if we're going to be consistent and look to you. So God, we're looking to you for your soon coming, and we thank you for that. So God, and we thank you that the wrath that's coming, the wrath that Israel is going to have coming up, I'm not going to be here for that. They are. But we aren't. Therefore, God, give me a little grace in my bondage. A little bit. It's coming. Give us a little space to honor you. We aren't trying to stop it. We're just looking for you, God, in your wonderful mercy and grace to keep us. And that's what we're looking for. So perhaps you have a particular request you'd like to take as we go to prayer. Remember the prison ministry. Remember the people that are sick and have varying needs that you know. Remember the young people in school, college, the men and women in the military. Remember our country. Remember